Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. This is Joel A. Erickson, Colts beat writer for the Indy Star. I am joined, as we continue through our guest hosts of people who follow the Colts, by Colin McCullough, director of BR Gridiron. Colin, thanks for not only being able to do this, but being able to do this in person. We are, for listeners, we are in Forest Park in Noblesville. We are both Northeast Side people, and it just kind of worked out that way. So thank you for being able to do it. This, it kind of makes it easier.
Yeah, so if not enough people hate me for my Twitter brand already, now they know I'm a Northeast Sider, so they can add that to the list. But great to be here live from Forest Park, finally. Big fan of the podcast. Like I was telling you beforehand, before recording, it saves me from so many morning runs. And great to be here in person and excited to get into it.
Is it bad to be a Northeast Sider?
I would say more a Carmelite, so shout out to Blake if he's listening on that. More a Carmelite, but Noblesville doesn't exactly have the best stigma either. I would say you and Fisher's probably are sitting the prettiest of all the Hamilton County residents.
Yeah. I have heard some Noblesville scuttle, I guess. Where I am in Fisher's, I'm not that far from Noblesville, so it's hard for me to feel like they're that different.
Yeah, the stench wafts over the border a little bit, right? So as a Nobles Tuckian now, who was a Fisher's resident, who was a, I will say, at least Indianapolis resident for most of my childhood.
See, the Noble Tucky thing, that's the one I've heard the most, is the Noble Tucky thing.
And I have to wear it. I have to wear the badge now. So that's where I am in my life.
People always want to know like how I ended up in Fisher's. And the answer is that my wife is from the South. And she cannot drive in the snow. And I told her if we moved somewhere where it snowed, we would move wherever she got a teaching job. So, boom.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
That's how it ended up, and it worked out great.
Yeah, great schools up here.
Anyway, to get into the Colts, I wanted to start by talking about Carson Wentz. And there is a wide variety of where people are, I think, on Carson Wentz after the first five games. There's the one person who was very upset at me on Twitter for saying that he hasn't been perfect, essentially saying I don't know what else he could do. I have a few thoughts on that, but you know that there's that side of the thing, and then on the other side of it are people who are like he's still bad. It hasn't been terrible. Where do you fall on Wentz?
Yeah, so I mean, I think this year, obviously, the biggest thing is it has to be a meaningful evaluation year. The Colts have to know coming out of this year what they have in Carson Wentz so they can construct the team as they need to going forward. So I think so far it's okay to say that there's been some bad and there's been some good. I think if you look at the DVOA stats, he's bottom of the league for the first three games. He's toward the top of the league. I think he's number two across the last 2 weeks. So he's coming out just a little ahead of where Phillip Rivers was this time last year. Are we learning anything meaningful long-term by that yet? I don't know necessarily, and I don't know how much injuries have just obfuscated that evaluation over the last few weeks. It looks like he's getting closer to 100%, but I'm of the opinion that, hey, I see some franchise quarterback skill sets out of him. I'm a little concerned still, though, that the Colts seem to be reaching for a quarterback or trying to find a quarterback who can still be the difference in winning a game. And, you know, we can talk a little bit about the third down call and whether or not Reich felt comfortable putting Wentz in a position to go ahead and win that game versus playing it a little bit conservative and maybe asking for Rodrigo Blankenship to do that injured. But I think we still need to find out, hey, the skill set looks like it's there, but is Wentz the difference that, like Andrew Luck, if he's receiving those comparisons, can go out and just win a game on his own when called upon? Because know thyself when it comes to your roster, and right now defensively, which we can segue into later, it looks like you might need to win a few games with your quarterback position.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think my thing with Wentz so far is I sort of came into this season assuming that we were going to see a little bit of the feeling out period that we saw with Rivers last year. You know, I keep reminding myself that this week last year specifically was right after the Browns game.
Yeah.
And Jim and I were talking a lot about at this time last year about, okay, obviously it's not good, but is it as bad as everyone is saying? And I don't think we ended up coming down on that way, and it ended up, you know, being the right call. But I was thinking that there would be more turnovers at this point.
Sure, yeah.
I was thinking there'd be more turnovers. I was thinking it would look more herky-jerky from him. Because it's kind of taken – I mean, this isn't – I don't know if this necessarily think this is really Reich's fault. It's he's had four new quarterbacks, and it takes a little time in games to figure out exactly what you have. So – I think the biggest thing for me is just kind of being pleasantly surprised at how quickly he's been able to be not a not a top 10 difference maker by any means. Like, we're not I'm not trying to say that, but played good football. Good football that didn't – he hasn't hurt the Colts for the most part. And a lot of times he's helped them, I think, in games.
Yeah, and I think, like, look, we saw some great things in the Rams game before he got hurt. I was a little bit concerned. I think I tweeted out, and nothing more dangerous, as we were talking about prior to recording, about tweeting out during the first half of a football game.
Real quick. There's nothing more dangerous, because then people will see it after the game has changed and assume that you tweeted it after the game has changed.
Yeah, and over the course of 48 hours, and you'll see it about 20 times. Right. Like, yes, I know, I put a disclaimer. I just did a reply in thread at that point. But I think we saw some good things. He got injured. We obviously saw him out there versus the Titans and was a shell of himself. So I kind of throw that out the evaluation script entirely. I think what I had tweeted at halftime of the Monday Night Football game versus the Ravens was essentially, yeah, okay, I mean, take away 76 yards that Jonathan Taylor earned, and I'm a little bit concerned that it's another sub-100-yard half, and they're not scoring touchdowns still with regularity. That seemed to change a little bit in the second half. He took the shot to Pittman. He had a few downfield post routes that looked pretty damn good in terms of his placement. But, yeah, I think that I've been waiting to see the Carson Wentz that's not just relying on screens, crossers, mesh concepts that I feel like anyone can hit, you know, just going through some basic progressions. But who's going to take shots downfield? I think we saw that yards per attempt soar versus the Ravens. It was up over 10 yards attempt,
He was down around like 6.5 or something like that after the Titans game for, I think, obvious reasons.
Yeah.
He's at 7.6 now, which is really good for any iteration of really the Reich offense so far. It depends on what parts of it you're talking about. Because, like, Andrew Luck, I think, finished at 7.2.
Sure.
But it's severely altered by the way they had to play before they knew what the line was. After that, it was like 8-something.
Yeah.
So, I think that the shots downfield is definitely something. Because I think part of it is, it seems very clear to me that he's aware of the turnovers.
Yeah.
You know, he came in the other night talking about how upset he was about the strip sack. And I don't know. I think if you want to be mad about the strip sack, I think that it's fair. He did lose it, but I'm more mad at Eric Fisher on that play.
Fair, yeah.
Because it's a blindside hit. He's trying to move away from it, but it's a blindside hit. I mean, maybe he could have protected it better, but you're going to have some of those on the blind side. But I know it bothered Wentz deeply. Like, Wentz mentioned it like 3 or 4 times in his press conference. So I think that he went into the season going, I got to figure out a way to fix this turnover issue, which is good, but I think it's sometimes what you're saying is right. Like, he hasn't taken as many chances down the field. I also wonder how much his lack of time with the receivers and the way some of them have played so far is playing into this.
Sure. Know? Yeah. And some of that, I think we look at the situational football too, right? I mean, again, between the 20s might be one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL, but where is he taking, you know, where is the odd shovel pass interception coming? Where is the sack fumble coming? Mm-hmm. Where are these field goals coming? I mean, they're not converting touchdowns in the red zone, and that doesn't entirely fall on the quarterback, but at the end of the day, you know, between Reich, between Wentz, between receivers who are dropping passes and the whatever offensive line, we can chalk it up, but at the end of the day, they do need to be scoring more touchdowns, and people are going to look at the quarterback when it comes to red zone efficiency.
I think with the receivers, I think it's pretty clear he trusts Michael Pittman now.
Sure.
And should.
Yeah.
I mean, that's totally fair. Obviously, on the 4th and 11, that's where he went correctly and got the first down. That's where he's had the two deep balls that were the one on Monday night. I think when the ball got there, it looked like he was taking more of a 50-50 shot.
Oh yeah, but he was
when
hit
he let it. Yeah, when he let it go, I thought if he could really step into it from where I was sitting in the Ravens Stadium, like, you could see Pittman had them and he was trying to go over it, but he gets hit, so it made it more of a 50-50 ball. So I think he trusts Michael Pittman. I don't know that anybody else, with the exception of maybe Mo Alie-Cox, has given him reason to feel like they're going to catch that.
Yeah, and shades of Paris Campbell dropping the one that fell in his bread basket, just like populating my head there. But
Pascal has quietly had some, not on deep balls necessarily, but some contested catch issues.
Yeah, I would say some of those have arguably been some hospital balls. So I understand, yeah, you know, fair. Like, yeah, but.
Well,
yeah.
So this is always a good thing that Jim always gave me crap for. I am maybe the meanest critic on drop passes that there possibly is.
Fair. Yeah.
I kind of tend to go, you're in the NFL, you have to make that catch. That's what sets the NFL apart. Whether or not that's fair is debatable. And I think most people could be like, you're right. Some of those were hospital balls. But I think to make those throws down the field sometimes that you have to make to get the big play, you have to know that you can throw a ball like that and the guy's going to make the catch.
Exactly.
You think about like watching some of the best receiver quarterback combos, you know, Rodgers, Adams, Mahomes and Kelsey more than Hill, because Hill is a different animal.
Sure.
But they'll throw it to him in almost any situation, just assuming they're going to catch it. And I wonder if he feels like he can do that just based on what we've seen so far.
Well, and it's so hard to piece together what was training camp supposed to be. What reps were they supposed to install? I mean, because I view Zach Pascal as, of course, you're not going to be chucking to a downfield with regularity. You're going to be running him on crossers. He's going to be, you know, a comeback route king. He's going to be involved in a lot of mesh action, you know, a lot of window dressing in the backfield. But who's really supposed to be getting downfield? It's probably Pittman. It's probably T.Y. Hilton. Maybe we see T.Y. Hilton this week, but obviously that's been a missing variable.
I think they wanted Paris Campbell to do it.
Sure.
And the play you brought up, like, it's just, that's a ball you got to have in the NFL.
Yeah.
You just have to have it. Like, down the sideline, quarterback puts it on your arms, and you got to have that ball, especially in that game.
Well, and you made a good earlier point about combating narratives, so I'm sure Carson Wentz is aware of his turnover narrative. I'm sure he's aware of the health narrative. That's probably why he pushed to be out there so strongly versus the Titans, even at the you know, not to the benefit of the team. Campbell might need to start being aware of some of the narratives around him and stepping up his game a little bit as well, because it's looking like, of many players who Ballard might need to make a decision on this offseason, he's coming down on the wrong side of one right now.
I know, and I thought in the first half the other night, this always happens. This is a really good example, another good example of tweeting before it's ready. I tweeted, Paris Campbell was starting to make some plays. He had three catches, and then he immediately dropped the slant.
Sure, yeah.
Immediately, like within seconds after me tweeting it. And it's that kind of consistency that they need from him. I think the biggest thing is that concerns me with Campbell is not so much the lack of work. It's just that, like, he was drafted to be a very specific thing, and we haven't seen any of it.
Yeah, there's been no usage of him out of the backfield, nothing out of reverses right now.
None of the stuff that they did even last year,
the
first couple games of the season. And I think that's a big concern for me, because if he's just more of a traditional wide receiver, then he has to make it as a traditional wide receiver.
Yeah, it's like that Harrison Smith hit almost scared them out of using him that way, and I figure if he's likely to get injured anyway, which we're seeing again, he's continuing to appear on the injury report. I mean, you don't know how many games you're going to have him. Use him while you got him.
Yeah, yeah. As far as Wentz, I think my biggest the red zone stuff is a good point. He's made some plays in there. He's also missed some plays in there.
Sure.
More of his misses, I feel like, have come there. I don't know if that's a – just kind of a happenstance thing on small sample size, or if it's you're down in the red zone and your eyes get big when you see somebody open or something like that. I mean, he's had good throws down there too, so I don't want to make it sound like he's been abysmal, but you're right. They do need to score more points.
Yeah.
As an offense, I think outside of just looking at the play-by-play, how your eyes look at Carson Wentz is playing, the points thing is just, it's just obvious.
Yeah. And specifically touchdowns over field goals.
Field goals for sure.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is you still want to see him. I don't think he's been terrible at holding onto the ball, but you still want to see him get better at that.
Well, pre-snap, identifying some of those hot reads, you know, knowing where to go. Obviously, that's continued to be, I wouldn't say a major issue, but we see it pop up a few times
a game. Yeah. And not with the sort of like, it would happen every once in a while. It would happen to Rivers, but it never got, like, I don't feel like it, I feel like it very rarely got Rivers after the snap. If
sure.
he missed it,
yeah,
it would be like he would, you know, pretend to do a sneak or dump it or something, like, really quick. He would realize his mistake. So that's a concern for me. Overall, though, it's been pretty good. It's been better than I expected with Wentz. And I think if you gave him the Colts team that they thought they were giving him.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it probably looks better. He probably looks even better, even if he maybe isn't, just because, I mean, the pressure has been real. You know, like, there's – I keep track of the time to throw stats. I pay attention to that a lot. And he is higher up. But so is Jacoby Brissett, and he's taking way more hits than Jacoby Brissett was.
Yeah.
That year. I think they hold the ball for different reasons. I think Wentz wants to get the ball down the field and take chances. I think Jacoby saw stuff and just was afraid to pull the trigger. But they hold the ball. They end up holding the ball about the same time. They're both escapable. Wentz is obviously much better at actually running when he has to. But that's what I keep coming back to is it's the time to throw. I think he's a tick under where Brissett was. I forgot to check this week because it's been a short week or whatever. But he's been hovering in the 2.8s. Brissett was at like 2.91 or 2.94. But he's getting hit more than Brissett was.
Sure.
He's getting hit and sacked more than Brissett was with probably better mobility. I mean, I know Jacoby's good at avoiding sacks, but Wentz is really good at avoiding sacks when he's healthy.
Yeah. Well, and maybe that's a good segue into, did you feel like the offensive line took a step forward versus Baltimore?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Fisher is still a concern. So I can't remember if I said this on the podcast before, but Benjamin Watson, he plays tight end for the Saints.
Yeah.
He was covering them down there, and he tore his Achilles. And I was asking him about it one time, and he said he didn't feel like he was himself for a year.
And they didn't expect to have him back until originally, what, October, November was the timeline that everyone was playing around with? Yeah, so.
Right.
Yeah.
So I have been wondering with these Achilles guys the whole time. That's been in the back of my brain, like a year. He said he didn't feel right for a year after he came back. And I kind of knew. I put it in my things column. Like, Odafeoa is insanely explosive. And that concerned me, and it turned into a sack fumble. But other than that, I mean, there was play action plays where Wentz had time to throw. There was ginormous holes in the running game. That's kind of been coming a little bit. They've started to get more and more as they go. Frank Reich said that they went with Pryor over Davenport because Pryor is more of a like bigger, stronger bully guy.
Yeah. That's what Frank Reich said. Yeah.
Well, it's probably true because that's always been one of the knocks on Davenport is that his frame is like kind of more big, power forwardy.
Yeah.
But also, I think the unspoken thing is just that Frank doesn't like to criticize his players publicly.
Yeah, and I think we've seen in there. I mean, you just don't see just tackle better. Rotations in the NFL like we've seen with them. So I think the writing's been on the wall for a while. What they've been trying to do, provided it wasn't an absolute train wreck. So. I thought Monday night, interestingly, we saw two big developments. One was the Matt Pryor development. Hey, maybe he's a serviceable right tackle until Braden Smith works his way through what apparently is an ever-lingering foot
awful
injury.
Foot strain.
Yeah.
The worst foot strain ever.
Yeah, which if you haven't listened to Colts Twitter, the Colts doctors don't know what they're doing, and there's no knowledge in the medical community whatsoever. I think that's always an interesting one to unpack when it comes to fans. But
I'm curious. Where do you fall on the Colts injury debate? I mean, I know they have more. My editor does a good job of tracking this statistically. Like, over time, they have more injuries. It's really hard as a writer to figure out how to have any idea or quantify whose fault that is.
Yeah, everyone wants one person to blame, and it's never that simple. You know, is it the field turf, you know, at training camp? Is it the field turf at Lucas Oil? I mean, they're not idiots. Chris Ballard is putting time and money into figuring this out, and answer sometimes is bad luck. Sometimes it's the players that you have on your roster are a little more susceptible to certain kinds of injuries. I think what's interesting sometimes is when you look at a report and you see certain body parts targeted across multiple players, maybe that might point to something in the training regime. But even looking at the injury report today, I mean, there's an illness, a non-football illness. There's a foot ankle. There's a shoulder, groin. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any one area. So I was kind of saying that tongue in cheek, essentially, and
well,
that it's easy to blame, you know. Yeah.
I was glad you brought it up, though, because I wanted to talk about it. It's just really hard. I actually had this same thing when I covered the Saints. There was a lot of talk about, like, and they actually fired their training staff at one point because they misdiagnosed a broken bone. Short of a team firing its surgeons or orthopedists or whatever, it's just really hard to know. Like, I know everybody was on the surface at Grant Park. I want to preface this by saying I'm not a turf expert. I might be the farthest thing away from a turf expert. I mean, it looked great to me. I was standing on it. I mean, I don't know, like, if there's a – I am sure there's somebody out here who's, like, knows how you get turf the right way to prevent injuries. But, like, it seemed like a great field. I've seen lots worse.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, like, you know, again, I don't think doctors are suddenly idiots or anything along those lines, but it is pretty telling when you compare injury reports each week and there's three or four opponents the Colts have had, and there's no injury designations for them on a weekend, and the Colts have 5, 6, 7. Now, again, IR rosters aren't tweeted out by teams on game days. So if you included the Ravens, they were a little closer to the Colts in terms of players out. But yeah, I mean, there is something going on. If fans want that easily unpacked, then good luck, because I think it's multifactorial.
It's not something that we don't think about. It's just something that I don't know that you can put a really good answer on. And I'm not sure there's anybody who can give you a good answer on it. I'm sure there's theories. I know there's theories that, like, I know there's one theory that the Colts don't play hard enough in practice. I've covered a different team.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same. Around the NFL, because the CBA dictates the way this happens.
Yeah, and you know, what, all of a sudden then they switch to playing 100% all-out starters deep into preseason, and then a starter gets hurt in a preseason game, and it's a different narrative, right?
So, right, yeah. I mean, like, you know, I'm trying to think of the last preseason. Well, the Ravens, although that wasn't a game. Did somebody get lost a preseason game this year?
I don't know.
The one that sticks out to me the biggest is that, like, Jordy Nelson played like one snap in a game once and tore his ACL.
Yeah.
If that happens, then everyone is killing them. Like, if DeForest Buckner goes down in a preseason game, even if it's in two snaps.
Sure.
He played three snaps in the preseason this year. If he had gotten hurt on one of those three snaps, people would be, like,
out of their minds.
If they played anybody.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff is hard. This is a digression, but it's an interesting digression, because this is one of the, like, sort of sacred things of the Colts that, like I said, we think about it. That doesn't mean that we can actually put a – I don't know that a doctor could put a full reason on it without looking at, I don't know, full body scans? I don't know.
Yeah, like, I know. And apparently even those you have to turn over 3 or 4 times, you know, in order to kind of figure out what's actually going on. I thought the other interesting development, too, if you all aren't picking up at the fact that we're adjacent to a playground right now, you may be soon gathering that. But it has been Chris Reed's performance over the next few weeks, and – you know, I know we're viewing this a little bit week to week heading into this weekend, but what does that mean long term for Quentin Nelson and the calculus on Colts offensive line and spend? I think some interesting questions are being asked, albeit on a small sample size with Chris Reed so far.
Kevin Bowen asked me this on the radio last week, and it was a good question. He was saying, does Chris Reed change the way you think about Quentin Nelson going forward? And first of all, I think Chris Reed's performance, I think anybody who's been following this training camp and everything knows Chris Reed was like this in camp.
Sure, yeah.
Like, the moment he got in there in camp, everyone was like, oh, wow.
Well, I think there was some expectation coming out of Carolina, even from, you know, a lot of people I saw at least reviewing film on him coming into the Colts, that, hey, you're getting a pretty decent player. Yeah. You know, this isn't just a shot in the dark. This isn't even Mark Lewinsky. What could he turn into? There's a track record here.
Yeah. So I think the obvious thing for Chris Reed is that next year he's playing right guard.
Yeah.
That's the obvious thing. The larger question of, does this mean that you should let Quentin Nelson walk?
Or move to left tackle, which I know is something fans are throwing out there and isn't as easy as it sounds, but that's part of the...
See, I don't know I love the idea. I don't know if... I'm just not 100% sure that... I know he did it for like 10 snaps last season. I'm not 100% sure that I believe that being the perfect guard means you'll also be the perfect tackle.
Sure, but even if you're an above-average tackle, is that better than...
Big. Yeah. Yeah, it would be big. Yeah. So Kevin Bowen asked me, does this mean that you cannot re-sign Quentin given some of his injury issues? Which is a really good question.
Yeah.
And what I said was, and this goes into what you just said, the only way I'm giving up Quentin Nelson is if I have a player of commensurate ability brought in at left tackle.
Sure.
Now, if Quentin Nelson can do that, maybe you do look that way. Or I'm saying, if you don't sign him because you're worried about the back or the ankles or whatever else has gone on this year, you have to have that player. And this is something that, from covering the Saints, there was a long time that NFL people talked about how the Saints had inverted the way people handled offensive line. They paid their guards. They didn't pay their tackles. And the theory was it was because Drew Brees was short and you had to keep that pocket in front of him. And finally, we just asked Sean Payton about it. My coworker and I got curious enough that we just asked him about it. And he said, It wasn't because you have to keep that in front of Drew Brees. He said it's because that's where our really good players were.
Yeah.
And you pay your really good players. And if you look at the Saints now, they've paid their tackles because that's where their really good players are. And so that's what I'm thinking with it, is the only way that you could possibly decide to let Quentin Nelson go is if you're bringing in a player who is of that caliber at left tackle or shifting him to left tackle?
And I would even say, well, first of all, leave it to the Saints to always come up with creative accounting solutions, right?
No. This comes up every offseason, but I don't actually believe in the salary cap, and it's because I covered the Saints.
Right, yeah, absolutely a fair point. But I would even extend that a little bit more broadly on Nelson, too, is if that contract is going to a playmaker. I mean, if that money's just going to be sitting there and if it's otherwise divvied up into three average players, are they going to produce the same for your football team as Quentin Nelson? So, I mean, is it an either or? Maybe, but I think you have to look at who you're bringing in. If it's Quentin Nelson or DK Metcalf, and obviously that's not in the market, but like we're talking about right. That kind of impact on a team and it's on the other side of the ball, okay, maybe that changes the weight. But looking around the Colts on the offensive side of the ball, I don't think you have a lot of players or other side of the ball that you're looking to pay Quentin Nelson money right now. So
No. It
might be a pay now, figure it out later kind of situation.
I do wonder if the injury situation makes them try to get a shorter term deal.
Yeah, well, good luck with that, I would say. Yeah, but
because Tom Condon's not an idiot.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I wonder if it makes it, like, and I don't know, this is another thing that I don't know that we're ever going to get a straight answer on. Because the Colts are not going to throw Quentin Nelson's injuries under the bus. And Quentin Nelson's people certainly aren't going to throw Quentin Nelson's injuries under the bus. So I don't know that we're going to get a good answer on
that.
And
his brand is very much play through everything. I mean, that's why the IR move was so publicly telegraphed, I'm sure. But, yeah.
Yeah, because he does not – like, he has played through just about everything.
Yeah.
Until this high ankle sprain. So, anyway, that's an interesting debate. Chris Reed is very interesting to me. Chris Reed is a guy who like you said, people kind of knew – It just kind of goes to show how little people value guards that he was available for the price he was available for.
Well, and you've made a great point previously, just throughout previous podcasts, on interior offensive line pro scouting for the Colts. It's really good.
They're really good at it.
Yeah, from left to right, you know, across the center, they find good solutions routinely.
If they could just figure out how to do that at tackle, they'd be fine, but they can't.
Well, I think another interesting wrinkle, so we're thinking big picture, long term. I think that's what most of the fans are discussing. But let's say Eric Fisher does settle in this season. TBD, I mean, I thought he settled in a little bit, at least as Monday Night Football went in. Does Reed replace Glowinski when Nelson comes back?
I think that's, to me, that's like almost a slam dunk, obvious, because he's not going to cost that much.
Sure. No, I mean, even this season. Even.
Oh, this
yeah, when
season.
Nelson comes back, yeah.
This season, I don't know that they do it this season. I know Glowinski's had his troubles. I don't know that they do it this season. That's more of just a gut feeling on how the Colts tend to handle guys. They're not a – they don't tend to be a team that yanks people quickly.
Sure.
But, I mean, if the flip side is if Glowinski becomes a glaring weak link. I don't know that he's been a glaring weak link, but some of that is because Julian Davenport's been on the field.
No, it's like when you're the weakest player on a Fab Five usually, yeah. But the correct answer to all this, of course, is that injuries will prevent them from ever having a best five out there. So
that's the other thing is that a lot of times this just ends up getting figured out by injuries.
I mean,
I will say this, Glowinski is the most durable Colt over the last 3 years.
Sure.
He literally hasn't missed a snap. I think maybe since he started in 18, like he definitely hasn't missed one over the last 2 years. So maybe it doesn't, but you're right. Injuries do have a way of fixing this. Fisher kind of talked about this. He's going to have to figure out a way to compensate for some of what he's missing for his Achilles.
Yeah.
Sometimes guys can do that. Older left tackles can do that. And so if he can do that, man, it would really help. That you take that sack out of that game the other day. And I still think that the defense is the largest culprit of it. But man, you take that sack out of it and they come away with points on that drive and it's a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Defensively, let's move to the real pain.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I feel like the offense is getting better.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we spent a long time talking about it. That's most of my questions are on defense as well. Yeah. I think offense has some 2022 and beyond questions that are worth asking that are kind of getting surfaced now, but as far as fires that need put out this season, they belong on the defensive side of the house for sure.
Personnel is Chris Ballard, I think, would admit this, but the personnel is on the pass rush, I think, is the biggest problem.
So let me ask you, because this question I have, what have we learned about the pass rush so far this year?
What I think we've learned is the step forward that they were hoping for from Banigu or Touré maybe not coming.
Yeah.
Touré, Ture is more valuable than Banigu at this point. And he can be, like, we saw him against Miami. You know, he torched a bad tackle against Miami. I think he can do that. I think one of the things that people maybe didn't give enough credit or blame to with Ture is he had a really, truly devastating
gnarly
ankle
absolutely
injury.
Yeah,
like, guys don't lose a season and a half, and that's basically what he, I mean, I know he played last year, but he was a shell of himself, and he had to have surgery on it again. And so I don't know, maybe if he can bottle whatever he had, I don't think he's ever going to be more than the situational guy who plays 20 snaps, let's put it that way.
Sure. Yeah.
Tyquan Lewis and Al-Qadim Muhammad are first and second down guys.
Yeah.
And I actually think they're starting to play better.
They've had more discipline on rollouts. I'll say that much at least. Yeah.
Tyquan Lewis is starting to have like some of those, like, he's had a breakthrough play on the running game in each game. He had the great one where he destroyed the Dolphin. He had another one the other night. He's starting to kind of find it a little bit, but he's not going to be that's why they rush him inside, is because he doesn't have the speed to rush outside.
Yeah, let's put it this way. There's no speed to power, power to speed. There's no pass rush plan. It's just power. If it happens to get there, great. Yeah. You know?
Like, he's going to shoot the first gap, and then I don't know that he's – you can't put him on the edge. The biggest thing for me is I just – what we've learned about the pass rush is they really need Kwity Paye and Dio Odengbo.
Yes.
To turn out – long-term to turn out good. They need it in the short term as well, but you can't write these guys off, especially Odengbo, if they don't have, like, a breakout first season.
Well, what I was going to say I think we've learned is that Odengbo is no longer necessarily a luxury pick. They kind of need him this season, which obviously is putting unfair expectations on top of him. We just spent time talking about recovery from Achilles injuries. Well, he's going to be viewed as a potential savior, whether that's fair or not, to the pass rush. I guarantee that first game that he maybe not comes out of the tunnel because he's probably going to be the starting lineup, but you know, the first time he takes the field, I'm sure fans are going to be going nuts expecting third down sack.
Think about what Eric Fisher said. The 10% of explosiveness is the hardest thing to get back.
Yeah.
And it's kind of important for a pass rusher.
It's kind of his game. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
It's his entire game.
Yeah.
Is that short-term explosiveness. So they really need to – because I don't know that they have anybody that you can count on. And ultimately, they should have made a move in free agency.
Yeah.
I think
a Carl Lawson, some along those lines. Yeah.
And Lawson, who I love, partially because I covered him at Auburn and I kind of know him. I kind of know him a little bit and I just know the way he thinks. But also just he can just really get a lot of pressure. You saw why they didn't go hard after Lawson because he's on IR.
Exactly.
But Trey Hendrickson has had some sacks.
Yeah.
Hassan Reddick has had some sacks. Hassan Reddick cost almost nothing.
Oh, I know. Yeah. That wouldn't have been hard to justify on that contract at all.
I get what Ballard was doing because he's been putting temporary fixes on it. And the desire is to eventually have people that he can count on long term. But I think everybody kind of saw that they needed to have a temporary fix in case this didn't work out.
Yeah.
And they didn't get one. Eberflus kind of hinted at this earlier this week. I think the blitzing is going to start even more.
Is that a good thing based on what we've seen from blitzing so far?
Not necessarily. Yeah. Because it puts defensive backs who aren't that great in bad positions.
Well, players who have usually been effective at blitzing, thinking Darius Leonard, thinking Kenny Moore, haven't been anywhere close this year. And so, I mean, some of that's been injuries limiting someone like Darius Leonard, but I'd be just as concerned with anything about the fact that when they've sent more than four this year, the results have been abjectly terrible. I think maybe they got Russell Wilson on a sack off the blitz or a few sacks.
They got him on one, but they also gave up the first touchdown.
Yeah, exactly.
They got Tyler Lockett against Kari Willis, and that's going to happen. So that's the other part about this is that the other thing I've had with the defense is just the scheme in general.
Sure.
And there's a real disconnect for me between, like, watching the Manning cast of Packers Lions and hearing them talk about how all these teams are moving to zones that sit back.
What
I wrote about today, and they force quarterbacks to throw underneath. And like, I'm like, this actually sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
But it's not working here. And I think part of it is the pass rush. I think part of it is just that the Xavier Rhodes has not played the way he did last year. TJ Carey has not. Could we have seen that coming? Probably.
Yeah.
You know, Carey especially. I think Rhodes, there was maybe more of a belief that he could do it again because the Colts aren't asking him to do what he did in Minnesota when he started to look really bad.
Well, I'm curious to pick your brain on this because I have seen a lot of discourse around the cornerback specifically this week. And it makes sense. Obviously, look, we saw Bo Pete Keys in that game. You know, we've seen what the depth looks like beyond even TJ Carey, who was getting roasted in week one. It's not good. That said, Lamar Jackson doing most of his damage over the middle of the field. You know, I think that's kind of interesting. We're talking about schematic failures. Do cornerbacks play into it? Yes, but I have far more concerns about the safeties and linebackers underperforming this year in coverage.
Well, and I think what's worse about that is that those were the guys they were supposed to be counting on.
Yeah.
Know? Like, they bring back those corners thinking that they're going to be strong enough up the middle that they can live with some of the stuff on the outside. And you're right. I mean, most of it was over the middle. And one of the other things that I think I've noticed is just that I have always been very frustrated with the 15 to 20 yard hole in the middle of the defense. It's just been there ever since I started covering this team.
Sure.
And I get that the pass rush is supposed to eliminate that a little bit. But I think the more disturbing thing to me now is how many checkdowns are going to guys where there's no one there. And I don't think we saw that in the past as much.
Or where we're seeing someone like Kenny Moore come up for the tackle attempt and miss.
Angles,
you know? Yeah, exactly.
Angles and tackling have been really bad. Some of the angles have been like while the play is happening, I'm watching the player approach. I'm like, this is a miss. Like, you can tell right there, like, the angles have been really bad. And honestly, the middle of the field, that's some of that's Kenny too. Like, Kenny ends up playing in there a lot. But yeah, the tackling, the angles, the people just don't seem to be closing down on those checkdown type plays. There was one against the Ravens that sticks out to me, and I will admit it gets that comeback was so fast.
Yeah.
That it was hard to really put into processing everything we saw. Then you fly back on Tuesday, you're back at the facility on Wednesday. I haven't got a chance to really watch it.
Sure.
There's one play that sticks out to me. Lamar had time. He throws down to a running back at like 5 to 6 to 7 yards, and there was nobody for 15 yards.
Yeah.
And I don't know what coverage would you be doing that with unless there's 2 seconds on the clock and the other team's on the opposing 20.
I mean, I get playing Rodgers 15 yards off Hollywood Brown, but to your point, no one over the middle of the field. I mean, let me ask this. I was having a discussion with some friends recently about the most disappointing Colt so far this year, and everyone had different answers. And I had to think, you know, Jim Irsay kept telling me that Bobby Okereke, wow, I'm going to do that every time now.
I
start
know,
to say one and then like transition to the other, but Okereke was going to be an all-pro or Pro Bowl player, and we've heard the hype for years now. Let me ask you, is Bobby Okereke good?
I have not noticed him doing a lot. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
I've noticed him not being in places. I think that sometimes in – you know, I think the funny thing is that people have wanted Walker gone for years.
Exactly where I was going with this.
People wanted Walker gone for years.
He can't cover, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And Okereke, he has the range, he has the length, he has all that stuff. And we saw him in camp. Now, caveat, we didn't see him against Carson Wentz in camp. We saw him against Jacob Eason.
And no comment.
Sam Ehlinger. Yeah. I think everyone knows what that means. Make some plays on the ball coming forward, but just like sometimes where is he?
Yeah, I know. Well, to the point of that, you know, the check down scenario that you just gave, I don't know the specific play either. I don't know the coverage. I'm not going to be that guy who says it should have been this guy here. I can't even recall the play specifically, but too often I think we've seen that this year is the sacrifice for, okay, Anthony Walker's going to walk, but they'll upgrade because they're getting Okereke, who's a playmaker, who's going to cover so much more ground. The reality is we haven't seen any plays on the ball. And look, when you're partnering with Darius Leonard, who's fantastic in space, even playing through an ankle injury, has been effective at making plays this year, but we know is going to sacrifice some play in coverage, you know, being able to cover a tight end or be able to pivot with a wide
and
receiver.
I don't think Darius is able to break on the ball the same way.
Oh, a pivot route's going to destroy him every time.
Because of his ankle right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. But then, like, this is – and I don't know. Somebody who maybe – dislikes Walker more than I do can correct me on this, but I felt like Walker was not great at running down the field 10 to 15 yards. I felt like Anthony Walker was frequently in position to tackle a check down back right after the catch.
Yeah.
No yak. Like, I felt he was really good at closing on the ball, and they've had big issues with that this season. I mean, the most obvious one is the insane touchdown against the Titans. The one where, like...
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
The check that, like, Eberflus got what he wanted there. Like, Eberflus played a coverage there that says, if you throw it in the end zone, I'm going to pick it off. If you don't make a mistake, you're going to throw it to 5 yards. We're going to tackle you, get the field goal, get off the field. And no one touched him. And I... Like, that's a play where someone has to be there. Like, it's a check down to a running back at 5 yards on a 10-yard play. Somebody has to make an attempt. And I wonder, you know, I wonder sometimes – so here's the thing I wonder with Walker. Did Walker's recognition and his knowledge of the game enable him to be in those places where the check down was to make those tackles? Now, is he as fast as Bobby Okereke? No. Can he get as deep as he can in a coverage? No. But did his ability – like, does his mental ability to know what was going on in defense put him in position to make those plays that just haven't been there enough? Like, there's been too many throws that have been short and then turned into 15-yard runs.
Yeah, and not to put all this on Okereke. You know, no, it's multiple linebackers.
Well,
it's,
Kari yeah. Willis, I think, is especially the first couple of weeks, would have been in there for my most surprising, disappointing Colt.
Oh, yeah, it's been brutal.
He was supposed to be a rock, and they talked about him as not like a future star, but like a guy that, like, this is a team leader who's always going to be in the right place. He's always going to do stuff. And I granted he's banged up now, but what, 3 touchdowns probably?
The deep play has been awful, and I think there was a third down play versus the Ravens where he was over the middle of the field on a simple slant you just have to drive on as a DB and close down and at least meet the receiver as the ball meets the receiver, and he wasn't anywhere close. And it's just like, you know, obviously middle of the field 15 to 20 yards wide open, but apparently 40 yards wide open too if you just turn the safety just slightly.
So Willis is in there for me. With free safeties, it's hard, especially when the rest of the secondary is playing badly.
Yeah.
Because with Julian Blackman, I think he's missed a tackle or two, but he also had some really impressive tackles against the Ravens. But I think if you're a quarterback, knowing Blackman's out there, you and having multiple options to go elsewhere, you just don't throw it at him.
Yeah, I don't think he's looked bad. I haven't seen him particularly at fault.
I haven't noticed him being at fault anywhere. So Blackman, not as much, but Willis. And, I mean, honestly, I don't know how hurt Willis is right now. He kind of came out late for practice today, which makes me think he's still banged up. But just, like, the fact that Andrew Sandejo played so many snaps.
Well, I think Willis left the game versus the Ravens, correct?
He was in and out and in. And
yeah.
I mean, he's been banged up, but you don't want Andrew Sandejo playing.
But injuries aside, you know, we're talking about regression from Xavier Rhodes. We're talking about regression from Kari Willis. We're talking about regression across the board from DBs. How much do you think Jonathan Gannon's departure really affected this defense?
I think it's definitely possible.
Yeah.
Gannon with Rhodes especially.
Yeah.
The relationship there. The relationship there is a big deal, I think. And Gannon's sort of past defense acumen, probably. I think there's probably some feeling out there to do with the secondary coaches, that kind of thing. For me, ultimately, though, this defense comes down to the pass rush just not getting there.
That's fair.
Like, I understand what everybody's saying about the corners, and they're right. They have struggled to draft corners. I'll be interested to see what happens when Rocky Sin gets back, because for 3 games, I was like, wait.
Talk about pleasant surprises.
Like, we've been joking about it in the press box for basically the whole season. Like, first it was Russ saying, who would have thought that the one guy on defense we wouldn't be concerned about so far is Rocky Sin? And then after he got hurt, it was like, who would have thought that Rocky Sin being absent would be such a big deal? So if he comes back and plays that way, then you give that one to James Rowe a little bit and getting him to get play a little better. But ultimately, for me, they got to get the ball out faster. You saw it a little bit against the Rams.
Yeah.
There were a couple of forced missed throws. The pick that Willis had, there were a couple of missed throws on third downs where you're like, wow, Stafford just missed that. And it was because there was pressure. You just can't – it almost doesn't matter what the scheme is. And I will admit to not being able to – I know what coverages look like, and I know, like, what cover four is and the principles of cover four and cover three and cover two. I would struggle to tell you why, say, Brandon Staley's too high is a much better one to play than the one Eberflus is playing, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I know that Eberflus is mixing up coverages more than we think. So ESPN put out this thing. ESPN and Next Gen Stats put out this thing that had the coverages that the Colts have used. And it was cover. It was actually cover three the most. Cover four, or cover two was second, and then cover four was fourth. Man one was third. And they, according to ESPN, they weren't running Tampa 2.
They're not just two having it, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Essentially, they're mixing it up a lot more than people said.
Yeah.
Even that is not very precise because Eberflus told us the other day that they play quarter half.
Yeah.
They play match three. They play this other stuff.
With zone blitz and drops from your D-line, too. Yeah. I mean, we saw the variety versus Baltimore. The problem was everyone kept saying, do something different. Well, he was doing a lot of different things, and none of it was working.
Nothing worked. Yeah. The zone pressures thing, people are like, you can't drop your defensive lineman into coverage. The problem is not that there's a defensive lineman in coverage. The problem is that the blitzes didn't get there.
Exactly. Well, there was one where I can't remember the defensive end, but someone dropped off of, it would have been the Ravens right tackle. Kenny Moore comes on the slot blitz effectively. And it did, the right tackle went, you know, was legitimately caught off guard. He was a step slow. Kenny didn't get there. He didn't round the corner on the tackle. Ultimately didn't get to the quarterback. Easy completion.
No one drops a defensive lineman assuming they're actually going to make a play
right
in coverage.
Yeah.
Although Grover Stewart
almost had the pick.
Season,
yeah.
And I think we all lost out when he didn't catch that ball. No defensive coordinator is expecting the defensive lineman to make a play there. He's dropping into a zone to take away a hot route.
Yeah.
And the assumption is the blitz is going to get there. As you pointed out, some of the blitzers they're sending are not getting there the way they have in the past. And it's going to be interesting to see what he does, because I think he's going to bring more pressure. I don't know what he's going to do to get some of that stuff going. Like, do you have to start sending five and six? Then you're in man against, in a situation where it's a banged up secondary. Is this great? Again, just with the zone pressures. People are like, I can't believe they dropped the defensive end into coverage. Yeah, because you wouldn't expect a defensive end to cover anyone because you're expecting the rush to get home.
Sure.
Like, Dick LeBeau wasn't like, you know what I should do? I'm going to drop my defensive ends down and have them cover the tight end and they'll be fine. That's not what he was thinking. He was thinking, if I drop this person out, it creates identification problems and we get home. And it doesn't even matter the defensive end's there. He's just there to make the quarterback hold on to it long enough to get hit.
So, Kimo von Ohlhofen, not a lockdown corner. We're confirming that here?
No. Okay. Nope. Yeah. Unfortunately not.
But I think, speaking of defensive linemen, though, something that's compounded the issue is that DeForest Buckner is getting doubled on a league average basis, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think there's a narrative out there that he's getting doubled every single snap because teams don't have to focus on edge rushers.
He gets doubled about like half the time,
yeah,
actually.
And if you look at like there's a chart that's out there, and I wish I could remember who tweeted it, but it's basically pass rush win weight versus double team rate. Mm-hmm. He's league average, so he's not
right
seeing more. Yeah, yep. Exactly. And I saw a lot of snaps versus the Ravens where he wasn't winning one-on-ones, if not losing them entirely.
I don't even have to put anything on this, like, from my own thinking. DeForest Buckner said he hasn't been happy with himself.
Yeah.
He just said it the other day. He said he felt like he sometimes goes through these periods and seasons where he feels like he's like stuck or grinding and he's not getting anywhere.
Well, that was the knock on him coming over from the 49ers. Their fans would have told you just as much, that he disappears in stretches. We didn't see it his first year, obviously,
right.
But yeah.
And so he feels like he's in one of those and he has to figure out a way to get out of it. They do need more from him. They're early on, I thought the first two games.
Yeah, you saw it.
There were several rushes where you're like, man, DeForest just needs anyone else to be back there. But the last couple of games, I do think he's in a little bit of a rut.
Well, that was the Stafford pressure you were alluding to. It was primarily Buckner. I wouldn't say it was anything special they were doing with blitz packages. It certainly
wasn't just anything edge rushers were doing.
Buckner. Yeah. Yeah.
You assume he's going to get out of it because he's DeForest Buckner. But yeah, you can't. The hardest part, and this goes back to where we started with the defense, is if you have, like, you think about the Niners. The Niners, the year they went to the Super Bowl, if Buckner went through a stretch like that, honestly, oh, well, because I have Nick Bosa,
sure,
and I have Eric Armstead and Dee Ford and all these other – they had a couple guys named Jones, DJ, and all those other guys who were like – they could rotate all these guys in, and if he went through a little bit of a slump, oh, well, like there's other guys getting there. The Colts need him to be in – like the Colts need him to be on top of his game on every single snap because they're not getting enough from everybody else. And, I mean, does he need to play better? Yes, he said that himself. But also, like, They just need more consistent rush. I thought the rotation of their defensive linemen might have been their biggest issue on Monday night with the pass rush. When you go back and look at the snaps and you see Tyquan Lewis and Alquadine Muhammad playing more than 80% of the snaps against that quarterback.
Yeah.
That's just a miscarriage of
the coin flip determined overtime, essentially, at that point.
How could you expect Tyquan Lewis and Alquadine Muhammad to not only play this very difficult run game that puts a ton of pressure on the ends, but also chase Lamar Jackson on every snap with all of the things he can do? Like, just think about the scramble at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
That is an insanely taxing thing for a defensive lineman to do. And then to ask them to play 80%, more than 80% of the snaps, that Eberflus kind of said that they need to rotate more. I know Baker is in charge of that.
Yeah.
Eberflus also has to be able to say, hey, we need to get more guys in here. You cannot leave those guys out there for 80% of the snaps against Lamar Jackson. It's not fair to them. And if you think about the way the game went in the first half, we were going, man, Alquadine Muhammad, man, Tyquan Lewis. And then you didn't see him later in the game. It's because they played 80% of the snaps and they'd already burned themselves out.
It is an interesting dynamic. I mean, it reminds me of, Reich and Rathman in years past when it came to, like, why isn't, you know, this running back seeing more carries exactly?
Yeah. No, you do have to delegate some of that, because I think it's probably hard for a play caller to be also thinking about, like, wait, has Jonathan gotten 25 snaps? Has Marlon gotten 20 snaps or whatever?
Sure.
You want them to, but you also need to, but you also have to be able to have somebody who realizes we have put guys out there too long against the wrong kind of player.
Yeah.
Like, if you're 80% of the snaps is probably too much against Tom Brady, who's not moving around. But against Lamar, in a defense that asks you to hustle on every play and run around on every play, I just don't know how you're going to expect them to still have it at the end of the game playing 80% of the snaps.
Yeah, let Banigu chase him around a little bit. Even if he doesn't land home, then
right,
at least,
Just let them get a blow of any kind, so that, because I felt like Tyquan Lewis was kind of giving it to Alejandro Villanueva early.
Yeah.
And I think I tweeted that. Like, there were several plays where you're like, wow, Tyquan. And then I didn't see him at the end of the game, and then I looked at the snaps the next afternoon because it was really late night for me. And I looked at the snaps the next afternoon. I was like, well, that's why.
Yeah.
He played too much.
Well, and adding fuel to the fire, I guess that just reminds me, Ravens didn't exactly have the best offensive tackles playing in that game either.
Nope,
so
Ronnie Stanley's not in there.
Yeah, the lack of productivity we saw from edge rush is a pretty big red flag. Yeah,
it's bad. Ronnie Stanley's not in there. Alejandro Villanueva is a very flawed tackle at this point in his career.
If Colts fans wanted him as a solution to anything this offseason, they wouldn't be any happier than they are right now.
The Dolphins game, other than Ture, there wasn't really enough pressure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jacoby created some pressure because of the way Jacoby plays.
That Kwity Paye injury has just killed them in terms of getting any young evaluation. Yeah.
Well, and so that's the other thing, is that I think that they were robbed of, like, people are like, well, we saw Kwity Paye get sacks in the preseason, but he didn't get him in the regular season. His first two games were against Dwayne Brown and Andrew Whitworth. Like, I can't really think of a worse matchup for a rookie who's admittedly raw, admittedly learning how to rush on the fly because of the way Michigan played him.
Yeah.
Like, that's 400 career starts he played in the first 2 weeks.
Well, the good news is if he returns this week, he has the polar opposite scenario versus the Texans.
He is going to be back, and we've been joking that even if his hamstring didn't feel fine, it felt a lot better when Laramie Tunsil went on IR, because he was like, wait a minute, I get to rush the people I was rushing against before?
Yeah.
Kwity, I think getting Kwity back is a big deal.
Yeah.
This could burn me, but I think Kwity Paye is going to turn out to be pretty good. When you were watching him in training camp, it was really cool to watch somebody learn to do stuff. Like, you could actually see it happening in camp, where he'd be working. Not a lot of guys in camp can work one move, and just be disciplined enough to keep doing it for an entire practice. And he would do that, and it would get better as it was going. And you're like, I think that's the reason I think that he's eventually going to. Do I know he's going to get it right away? Listeners of this podcast know that I took the under on his, I think Jim said, 6.5 sacks, you know? But I do think he's going to get there eventually. I think there's going to be some pressure here this year. I think expecting Kwity Paye to dominate Dwayne Brown and Andrew Whitworth, if anyone was expecting that, That's a mistake. It's just a mistake.
Well, and one of these athletic DNs has to pan out eventually. I mean, the three cone is there for Kwity Paye. It's not exactly Owe explosiveness. It's different, obviously, but the explosiveness is
and
there.
He
it's
has just power, like real
it's,
power.
It's the power to speed. It's the pass rush plan.
He has
so.
Really he has real power. Like you could see. I mean, I know what Sam Tevi is.
Yeah,
it's still really, really hard to lift a 300-pound man off of his feet. It just is. So. I think Kwity Paye is going to get there. They need to get him back on the field so that they have a player out there that they can feel. I'd like to see him and Touré together some, you know, going forward. And I think we will. I think that'll probably be the NASCAR will probably be Taekwon and DeForest inside, and then those two on the outside. They got to do something to get these snaps down because it's just you already have guys who aren't great pass rushers, like who aren't dominant pass rushers, and then especially in Monday night's game. You're asking them to rush it less than, like, well, they're barely catching a breath. That's a brutal, brutal, brutal thing.
Yeah, and we saw it play out.
Real quick before we end this, where are you on Matt Eberflus?
I just feel like we've seen the same things over and over again. I mean, look. The points allowed for the defense are not bad if you look at them statistically. They don't rank poorly on a lot of defensive categories.
They're somehow still 18th in yards, which feels like I looked at that four times this week because I was like, what?
But the names change and the flaws stay the same, which is really frustrating. To your point, the 15 to 20 yard hole downfield. But I could tell you they could draft the prodigy of Ray Lewis meets, you know, whatever, Ed Reed. I don't know what that looks like and how that works. Let's save that for another conversation. But, you know,
player would definitely go number one, regardless of what position he plays.
I just don't want to really get into how that player comes to be. I don't understand the science of that. But that aside, I mean, still, there's going to be someone open over the middle of the field probably to catch a pass. And there's going to be some concession on outside boundaries as well. So
that's what I wrote about after the game was just, and I think that that's the biggest thing. It's just that regardless of what they're doing, this defense has pretty much been the same defense. They're really good against the run. If they run into the wrong passing game, well, if they run into any elite quarterback, they're going to have trouble. And then if they run into a different quarterback I will say this, they probably do a better job of making bad quarterbacks look bad than previous Colts defenses before I got here. But, I mean, they're still the Gardner Minshew days and the way they played at the end of 2019.
But that can't be good enough for a franchise where Chris Ballard has come out and said it can't be about one guy. Yeah. Well, they make it about one guy routinely when you're playing the Ravens, when you're playing, I guess maybe the Chiefs are a bad example because the last game, actually, they did have a pretty solid plan in place for Mahomes. But more often than not, the Rodgerses, the Jacksons of the world, it is on the quarterback to one-up them every time.
Yeah, and that's not what this team was supposed to be.
Yeah.
It just wasn't. And so I don't know. I something has to change for the defense to be able to play better against passing games. It just does. It just especially because the thing is, like, you know, you say elite quarterbacks, but it's pretty much good quarterbacks. And if you start going into that, if you start going into like all of the guys who I would consider to be pretty good quarterbacks, that list gets, like I said, I think the list is somewhere in the 7 to 8 when it starts to break and you get different tiers. But the thing is, I think all of those 15 guys would be problems for the Colts.
Yeah, and it's not
especially based on like what Derek Carr has done against them over the years. Like, Derek Carr is an elite. He's a pretty good quarterback, and he's usually had success. And so if there's 15 guys in the league that you're going to struggle against, your defense isn't good enough.
I just can't go over the QB completion percentage is just the stat that I can't get over. I mean, again, you can tell me that the defense isn't allowing a ton of points to be scored. Great. I do think that carries some weight, but you just cannot routinely allow quarterbacks to be completing 70%+ of their passes. Yeah. Point blank period at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's one thing if you have like what was going on in the Miami game for three quarters where it's like every completion is short. But the other thing is Jacoby actually was missing throws in there. And so the completion percentage, I think like the three quarters for him was like 55 or 60. Like, if you can have that plus the short one, then you have a chance to actually be what they say they're going to be.
Rhythm matters. Maybe that's why Jacoby Brissett, then the final two drives, when he starts corking him downfield, starts hitting his passes. Mm-hmm. I mean, for quarterbacks, it really does. Momentum is maybe a little bit of a myth across all NFL categories. You could debate that. But for quarterbacks, it's not.
Seem like guys get real hot sometimes. And they start to feel things within the coverage. And I mean, we saw the ultimate example. I don't think anyone could be hotter than Lamar was the other night. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Again, this is the part where I'm having trouble because, like I said, I keep hearing everybody talk about how everybody's playing the shells and the umbrella coverages and trying to make everybody throw short. And philosophically, that seems not that far off from what they're supposed to be doing here.
Right.
But we're not watching Brandon Staley's defense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're not watching Vic Fangio's defense. We're not watching it be as hard on a quarterback as those teams make it when they do that.
Well, and I'm not seeing the Will linebacker turn to the cornerback with his hands in the air every time there's a touchdown allowed, you know, from those other teams too. Right. I still think there's rife miscommunication, you know, among the defense as well.
And that's a big problem. If the defense, so last year the thing is they finished 8th and they'd been 16th the year before. And you felt like, okay, that's improvement. Maybe they can take the next step. But instead, we're seeing more of the same.
Yeah.
And Jim kind of has given me props for this. But, like, down the stretch last year, I was pretty frequently saying, guys, the defense doesn't look good. You know? And people are like, well, they're good quarterbacks. I'm like, yeah.
But.
But the defense doesn't look
good. Yeah.
And then the Steelers game happened. And then the Buffalo game happened. And... you know, the Buffalo game, Danico Autry had a sack fumble late that I think changed the way everybody was looking at that game. But the defense wasn't good in that game. They weren't good in that game. And I know that in today's NFL that people think of defense as sort of like ancillary and not a big deal. But like even great quarterbacks need defensive help. Even like the truly great – I mean, look at the Chiefs right now. They are 2-3 with the best quarterback on the earth.
Yeah.
Because their defense is – hot garbage. We were laughing about this at the Colts facility earlier today. They're like 32nd in every yards per play stat. Rushing, passing, who cares?
It's awful, yeah.
And they're 2-3. So I'll take the next guy on the list. Rodgers needed defensive stops against the Bengals to win that game on Sunday. Like, I really thought, like, it's not a perfect analogy to what happened with the Colts and the Ravens, but Packers scored a lot early, had some missed kicks. Probably should have lost the game, except that their defense forced field goal attempts and got an interception where the Colts defense just let Lamar just roll right down the end of the end zone and then just kind of have a fun little time with some 2-point conversions.
You know? And I think early in the Eberflus era, they prided themselves on standing up in the red zone too. And it's just, yeah.
Now it's just
red zone across this entire team has just been such a sore point. And you keep waiting for it to even out on offense. Again, it's like, oh, Reich is too aggressive. He's too conservative. You figure law of averages eventually,
well, and
you know,
just,
yeah.
For me, it's just his track record. They've been, like they were 5th this first year, 6th this second year. They fell to 17th last year. But like you just accept, with Reich, I just kind of feel like, if he was that the first 3 years, like eventually they're going to figure this out. Someday.
Yeah.
It's going
to
get better.
But you can't afford for both sides of the ball to be, you know,
that
on one end sack
terrible.
Fumbling or intercepting or scoring 3 and on the other end allowing Jeremy McNichols to go untouched for 10 yards because a linebacker can't sweep across whatever 20 yards of lateral space.
You know, that's actually – this kind of crystallizes something for me. And we might end with this thought. I want to hear what you think about this. But just – so with Reich's offense – we have seen it. I don't know that like the big philosophical stuff has changed necessarily, but we have seen him adapt to different players now. From the early Luck offense when he didn't have a line to the powerhouse they were down the stretch, to running the ball to protect Jacoby because Jacoby wasn't good. You know, I mean, it fell apart on him at the end of this. But now that we know what Jacoby is, that makes sense. Like, you can only have a backup quarterback for half a year, pretty much.
Yeah.
To being able to play with an immobile quarterback last year. And now you're starting to see, like, you're seeing them be different things.
Yeah.
With the offense.
RPOs come back into it.
RPOs back into it. You're starting to see them kind of play up the Taylor and Hines thing more when they're putting them in there together. You see them kind of morph and change and... is it all good? No. I mean, do I think he has bad play calls? Yes. Frank Reich says he has bad play calls, which I really appreciate. This is just an aside.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
I think fans do too, honestly.
Having covered somebody who would just tell us to bleep off, like, it's much better when the coach actually admits things.
Well, and these fans went through the Chuck Pagano era, so they will take anything over just the knowing grin of, yeah, this thing is going south.
But defensively, It's pretty much the same thing. And I think that that is where maybe the difference is between the two things for me. It's just when the Colts offense isn't working, stuff starts to change and maybe it looks different as the season goes along. Whereas with the Colts defense, it's been pretty similar year to year.
Yeah, I think they looked at 3 to 4 players to save them essentially during every game. It's the triangle, which has been kind of blunted edges on that triangle so far between Leonard, Moore, and Buckner. We've talked about all three.
None of them playing up to their standards.
And then Julian Blackmon last year. How many games did he close coming in for a play that honestly probably was well above the level he was drafted? And he was fortunate to be in some of those positions, fortunate to be playing rookie quarterbacks and honestly making easy breaks on some of those balls. But I don't think you can just keep sustaining on a defense essentially that's asking someone to make an improbable splash play in every single game versus operating on the sum of its parts of occasionally, like you're going to press down on third down and you are going to drive hard on these slants and not just concede, you know, a 90-yard drive or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think defense has felt the casualty of that triangle being a little bit softened this year, but hear you 1,000,000%. It's the names might change. The problems are the same over 3 years, 4 years of Matt Eberflus.
And Ballard does bear responsibility for the pass rush and for the corners, for not having the right players there.
Yeah.
But again, for a defense that's supposed to be adaptable, we don't see it change as much. And maybe this is the first time I'm thinking about this, so it's kind of hitting in my head right now. But like, we don't, it's the same defense. Good against the run, bad against great quarterbacks, sometimes bad against just good.
Well, not to belabor it, because I know we're trying to wrap here, but look, ultimately, like, I think back to that Kansas City game versus Mahomes, and there was a little bit of a difference in scheme from the Colts on that day.
They went man
and
a little bit
and
more.
And that's not the – you can't just, like, magically transform these corners, who, are, by the way, are bad in man usually, into man corners overnight. So that's not how it works. That's not the system they're drafted toward. But to your point, can there be more variation against elite quarterbacks that throw them off their game? Mahomes clearly didn't expect that look when he showed up that night, hence some of his inaccuracy. You get Ture then untracked in that game, and then that's recipe for an upset. Is there more of that, you know, up Eberflus's sleeve somewhere?
He's going to have to do it down the rest of the season, because I feel like the spotlight has focused on him more than it ever has before this week.
Yeah,
and I mean, duh, like that was an all time collapse we saw, but. He's going to have to, because what they're doing right now, it just isn't working.
Well, we need some reference points that aren't 2 or 3 years old. The Cowboys game, the Chiefs game. It would be great to have one within the last season, for instance, to refer to.
Right. Well, and like last season, they started out so hot, but it was against Sam Darnold and Kirk Cousins. It was against guys who I wouldn't necessarily put in that like really good quarterback category. And then when I started playing those guys, terms of the defense, you know? So... hope that came through. They're going to have to figure something out. They're going to have to blitz, I think, to begin with. I think it's going to end. Whether or not that works, we'll see. But I don't think they have any other choice the way the pass rush is going right now.
Yeah.
Unless Quiddy Pay figures it out here.
Well, knock on wood, we are sitting at a table here, so that works.
Okay, that's it for the Colts Cover 2 podcast. Big thanks to Colin for coming on and for, again, meeting me so we get better sound quality than sometimes on the phone. We will continue rolling with the guest hosts. Nat and I will be back for the First Impressions podcast after this Texans game. Unfortunately, it's during the day, so you guys get me when I'm still a little bit less loopy and a little bit more reserved in what I say. But until then, we'll see if the Colts can figure some stuff out. Thanks for listening.